much less a score of them down in that pit.
That's why this is part of the exam, Blue Rose said. This is an academy. They want us to use our brains to solve problems, not just our skills. We're obviously not supposed to kill all those things.
It personally didn't matter to me. I was always up for an axe fight in close quarters, but I suppose her plan would be faster. All right, I said. Let's see if this works. I banged on the side of the pit with my axe, and the sound resonated like a bell. The Takerids reacted immediately, raising their heads up at me and chittering with their jaws. Taj Chui joined in by slamming the steel with the base of his Jan blade. The thing started to grow more agitated, but seemed more confused than anything else. Some of them even began digging into the metal of the floor, trying to either escape or instinctively burrow into the ground to seek the source of the vibration.
Try harder! Blue Rose shouted.
I'll help! A new voice said as another fly guy touched down from the air and began banging the side of the steel pit with a set of claws like Zhu Tian used. A few more minutes passed to no avail, and a few more tributes showed up, panting and sweating more than the rest of us that were already here.
What's going on? One of them asked.
Can't you see? Blue Rose said testily. Join in and help!
The banging turned into a cacophony of clamor and clatter as more tributes joined. But for the Takrids, all it seemed to be doing was causing confusion. They milled around in circles, even more agitated, digging futilely at the floor.
Ah, to hell with this, I thought.
I knew how these things sensed the world, and enticing them with sound alone wasn't going to do it. I leapt from the side of the pit, drawing huge gasps of shock from everyone above. I fell halfway and then hacked into the side of the pit with a massive chop of my axe. The blade buried itself deep into the steel, and I hung by the shaft above the Takrids like a worm on a hook. The live bait did the trick, and the Takrids shifted to one side of the pit to swarm underneath me. They hissed and clattered their chitinous jaws, literally crawling atop one another like crabs in a bucket trying to reach me. This was probably as good a shot as we'd get. Go now! I shouted. Blue Rose didn't waste any time. She did her hand-shuffling thing, and in a burst of chi popped down into the bottom of the pit. She dashed forward to the post in the middle of the floor, some 30 feet behind the swarming hill of Takrids squirming beneath me. She snatched something from the post, and then with another set of hand gestures reappeared back at the top of the pit. Blue Rose threw one of the emblems about her neck, and it was then that I realized that she had only taken one.
Sorry, boys,
she said with a grin.
But first place is a high-tier elixir. No way am I passing on that. You'll all figure it out, I'm sure. Good luck.
Son of a... With that, she sprinted away and disappeared in a burst of chi. My flame roared. That little bitch.
Wait!
Someone shouted after her.
Don't we all get a reward if we return them all together?
But Blue Rose was already long gone.
Forget together!
Taj Chui shouted and flew down into the pit with a gust of chi. Two more fly boys quickly picked up on the idea and flew down with them. Each of them quickly snatched an emblem from the pole and then flew out again, heading off in the direction of the prison.
Bastards!
One of the tributes shouted, throwing a stone at Taj Chui.
You wouldn't even get all of them out of the pit for us, at least!
Taj Chui laughed back at him.
Learn to fly, assholes. You probably won't make it as a legionnaire anyway if you can't at least do this.
Son of a bitch, I cursed as a rage lit within my soul. This was the Cult of Vader Society mentality that I hated the most. Screw working together. Every man for himself, and if you can dick someone over in the meantime, all the better. I seethed inwardly at Blue Rose. I still didn't know her very well, but her personality was starting to spell asshole with a capital A. Frenzy poured from my flame, and I channeled it through my meridians to engage Mark of the Giant. There was only one way we were all getting out of this exam, and that would be by brute force alone. And honestly, the way I was feeling now, that was just fine with me. I released the axe with a mighty war cry and reached for the handle of my phalanx glaive instead. I spun with a downward chop, unleashing an enormous bolt of blue lightning from the sky. Lightning splits the towering oak! My blade exploded with crackles of blue energy as the huge mounds of Takrids was decimated by my killing blow. pincers, claws, and thoraxes popped as my glaive cleaved straight through the massive pile of insects and hit the bottom of the pit with a resounding clang. I wasn't sure how many of them I'd killed, and I didn't care. My bloodlust kicking in was confirmation enough that I was making some headway. I used the additional frenzy to fortify my body with steel skin and steel core as I tore into the scattering tachyrids with abandon. Claws and pincers raked my skin, drawing blood to add to my lust for battle. I cleaved into another tachyrid, chopping his head in two before it could even reach me. Two that were chasing after it tumbled over the body of their dead brethren, and I used the opportunity to get two good swings into one of them. I had to admit, fighting these things after only 2 weeks of being on planet and cultivating in the harsh gravity had done wonders for my strength and resilience overall. The things were still strong as hell, but I downgraded them to perhaps being high-tier C-class monsters in my mind right now. Still, there were a lot of them, close to 24, and the odds were still against me indeed. I used the new Fountain of Frenzy to bolster my defenses with steel lightning as a pair of tachyrids attacked me from opposite sides. One of them bit into my shoulder, and another stabbed me in the leg with his claws. Pain surged from both attacks, but my ablative technique did its job and blew their insect parts to pieces before they could even break the skin. Then, almost as if their hive mind could sense the presence of a superior foe, they all seemed to link together and surged back at me en masse in a dogpile. I screamed with defiance as their spikes and pincers tore into me, threatening to rip me apart even through my steel skin. I was suddenly in over my head. The swarm of creatures began attacking in unison, not even giving me a chance to recover as I was tossed between them like a rag doll. My mind was swimming with disorientation and pain, and I partly wondered if their ooze hadn't poisoned my bloodstream somehow. The situation began to grow desperate as I nearly lost hold of my glaive. No! Enough of this shit, I thought. I wasn't going down as some mutant mantis snack! Wrath of 1,000 slain souls! A huge detonation of frenzy erupted from my soul and sent the creatures flying against the walls of the pit in a shockwave of blue lightning. I surged with new vigor as I landed on the ground, finally free of the mass attack. But they weren't all dead yet. More than half were still alive, albeit now temporarily stunned by my attack. I looked up and saw all the tributes staring down at me with fear in their hearts. Get your asses down here, I shouted at them with struggler's resolve. We fight these things like men. No flyboy chicken-ass bullshit like those bitches who left. Come on, get down here now. The power of my technique resonated with the frenzy burning in my soul. Almost instantly, the fear in their hearts turned to lemonade, and they all jumped into the pit with me while screaming battle cries. Steel sung through the air as they attacked the staggered creatures, hacking away with halberds, swords, and spears. Their fervor encouraged my own bloodlust, and I went back at it, sinking my phalanx glaive into the nearest tachyrid to separate its abdomen from its thorax. The creatures began to recover, but with our numbers and coordination, we managed to stay on the offense. They kept individual creatures busy while I tore them down one by one. I wasn't sure how long it took. But by the time we had finished, we were all breathing hard and stinking of insect guts. Victory! Someone shouted, and in unison we all thrust our weapons into the air. Victory! We wasted no time getting to the pole in the center of the pit, and each of us claimed an emblem. They were indeed fashioned like dog tags. A cheap piece of chain and a thin flap of metal marked with the Academy insignia. When everyone seemed to have gotten one, I noticed there was one left on the pole. I looked about. I didn't know who these guys were, but there was one face I hadn't seen yet. Ho Chin. Where the hell is that asshole? I muttered. There was a chance he was still on his way, but the guy was a Class A bullshitter. If he was going to make it here and back, he should have long since been here by now. I thought for a moment. I could leave it for him if he eventually showed up, but chances were I'd probably run into him struggling to get here while on my way back. For the team, I thought as I snatched the emblem. At least we'd all get a reward if we handed them all in. All right, you guys, I said once I had stowed the extra emblem in my robes.
Let's get the hell out of this hole. I took a few extra minutes to rest and have some water along with a quick bite to eat once I'd retrieved my axe and climbed out of the pit. It also gave me a chance to wait and see if Ho Chin might eventually show his slow ass up. A couple of the tributes bowed to me in thanks and wished me well on my journey back. Some of them even encouraged me to travel with them and said we might even have a chance to catch up to the Flyboys if we left quickly, but I waved them on ahead. I had no interest in winning or need of the elixirs if I did. I also had plenty of fresh frenzy in my Dentian for the trip back, and being completely alone, I could double manifest with Mark of the Giant and Mark of the Beast to get back in record time. I was still running Mark of the Giant in a casual form, and I wondered if I hadn't reached the stage to nearly leave it on permanently at this level. It would certainly be an advantage. People hadn't taken real note of me here as yet, and with half the tributes being sullied, seeing a guy my size wasn't something unusual. I finally set off after waiting an extra 30 minutes and poured on extra speed. I figured Ho Chin had either given up and turned back early, or had become Takrat food a long time ago. With my combined forms, I pushed through the desert like I was riding the wind, and the slightly dimming sky overhead gave me no worry at all. I actually used the time to reflect on how much I'd progressed even this short in my journey. I had a long way to go still. 2 more weeks as a white robe before I could even attempt a test to be put back where I needed to be as a black robe tribute. I wondered what the next exam would entail, or what the duties might be also. Hopefully I wouldn't be shoveling any more pig shit. My thoughts cut short as a shrill cry pierced the air. I slid to a stop, traveling some 30 feet in the process, and then suddenly heard it again. A woman's scream. Blue Rose? I hastened in the direction and found myself scaling a ridge of boulders to overlook a small rocky valley on the other side. I expected to see Blue Rose, being the only female taking the exam, but what I didn't expect was to see the monster towering over her, brandishing a club as big as it was tall, poised to bash her brains in. A monster named Ho Chin! Chapter 17. Part of me wanted to do absolutely nothing. Screw that bitch and her karma. And screw Ho Chin as well. They could both die out here for all I cared. Or so the demon was telling me. The struggler, however, knew there would be days like this. Days when I wanted to just piss off and let it all burn to the ground. But where would my humanity be if I did something like that? With a heavy sigh, I withdrew my axe and sped down the slope of the hill. Blue Rose and Ho Chin were still a good distance away, but even from where I was, I could see the outcomes of their scuffle. Blue Rose looked to have put up a good fight with Ho Chin, bleeding from several cuts to his arms and side, no doubt carved from the dagger still held in her hand. But aside from that, Blue Rose was clearly on her last legs, or on her ass, more like it. Blood was running down the side of her temple, and one of her legs looked bent at an odd angle at the knee. Blue Rose released another cry as she hurled her dagger at Ho Chin. With an amazing display of dexterity, he deflected it with a parry that sent the weapon sailing through the air with a metallic ring. I realized now what her first two screams had been. One was likely when Ho Chin had caved in her leg, and the other was when she had thrown her first dagger at him. But now she was weaponless and prone on the ground, and the fact that she hadn't used her fancy ninja magic to escape said that she'd perhaps already run out of chi a long time ago. There was nothing left for her to do but die. Ho Chin raised the club again, and the earth beneath his feet began to crack under the pressure of his chi.
"Don't worry. I'm not going to ruin that pretty face of yours," he said. "Just going to make sure you can't fight back. I've been dreaming about that face."
My stomach lurched. I didn't want to hear any more of his sick plans. Pouring on the frenzy, I leapt from 50 feet away and tucked into a roll. I screamed at the last second to draw Ho Chin's attention, and he paused mid-swing to glance my way. I plowed into him with a shoulder tackle, and Ho Chin went bouncing across the rocky ground, club flying. I looked down at Blue Rose, and her eyes were wide with shock. I expected to see a look of relief to come next, but instead she gave me a scowl as anger filled her soul.
"Why are you here? I don't need saving by you."
I scowled right back. "I'm not doing it for you, you ungrateful bitch." Ho Chin was already back on his feet and shaking with rage.
You need to mind your own damn business! This has got nothing to do with you, bull man! Piss off!
I readied my axe. You're right. I got no reason to interfere. You're both pieces of shit in my book. Except I got a thing against thieves, rapists, and assholes, and you just happen to be all three. He grinned, lifting his club from the ground.
Yeah, just pissed off I thought about doing this before you did. You don't need to be strong enough to pass the exam. Just stronger than the dumb bitch who just burned herself out from doing it.
He let out a self-aggrandizing laugh, clearly pleased with his own genius.
Plus, you can't tell me you haven't wanted a piece of that sweet ass all week. Tell you what, bullman, we call this even, and I'll let you go first.
A sudden spike of fear came from within Blue Rose as I looked back down at her, but her eyes remained fierce with resolve. Her heart was racing, no doubt sensing her life was truly in the balance now, depending on what I would decide. It made me sick to my stomach to think that she would even view me in such a manner, that I was capable of such depravity. But then again, for all she knew, we were all just rapists and thieves in here, convict tributes itching for the next score. Perhaps she herself was no different, considering what she'd done. But my humanity wouldn't allow it. For that, I said as I stepped towards Ho Chin with a heavy dose of fear of the flame and struggler's resolve. I'll let her decide your fate when I'm through with you. Ho Chin let out a scoff as he lifted his massive club onto his shoulder.
So you want it the hard way, huh?
He then swung his club through a series of martial forms, but inside I could sense the fear building up in him already.
Come on then, bullshit man! Give me what you got!
He never got the last word out. I flew across the distance between us in a burst of frenzy and landed a clean chop across his thigh. My blade cut through his leg like butter, narrowly missing the bone that would have cut it clean off. He cried out in a shriek of shock and disbelief, falling to the ground with a wail as he clutched his leg in pain. I grimaced at him with indifference. Just as I thought. The only bullshitter here is you. I reached down to grab him, and to my surprise, Ho Chin collected himself enough to retaliate with a wild swing of his club. I avoided it easily, but then realized he hadn't necessarily been aiming for me. As his weapon hit the ground, the stone quickly liquefied beneath my feet, and I fell through it like it was quicksand. I was suddenly buried up to my chest, my arms and axe stuck in the ground as the earth instantly solidified again. I quickly understood how this bonehead might have gotten the drop on someone as quick as Blue Rose now. Before I could even flex to try and break free, Ho Chin stumbled back to his feet and ran at me with a savage war cry.
You bastard! Think I'm weak? He screamed. Stonebreak asunder!
Huge chunks of rock formed on the club as he swung it at my head. I braced myself with indifference and steel lightning, preparing to take the hit dead on. The combined strength of our techniques collided as he slammed me with his club, and the thing shattered with a massive explosion of rocks, lightning, and steel. Ho Chin was blown back by the force of the detonation, and I used the opportunity to break free from the stone prison around me with wrath of 1,000 slain souls. I burst free from the ground like a Tancred, and before Ho Chin could even hit the ground himself, I snatched him out of the air. I went to town on his ass with my bare fists alone, channeling my rage into solid hit after hit. He was mewling and in a bloodied pulp by the time I had finished with him. I then dragged him over to Blue Rose. Here, I said, tossing Ho Chin before her. He's all yours. Fear swelled in Ho Chin's heart as Blue Rose stood shakily to one leg. She then limped across the rocky terrain to retrieve one of her daggers.
Wait! Ho Chin said. We can talk about this. We all get a bonus pill if we all survive, right? Think about that. You clearly didn't think about that when you were going to rape and kill me for my emblem, she said coldly. Go to hell, Ho Chin.
Blue Rose didn't so much as blink as she casually pushed her blade deep into the side of Ho Chin's neck. He gurgled and convulsed, reaching for her hand. But with a quick motion, she sliced open his throat and let him bleed out.
With a clatter, Blue Rose dropped her dagger to the ground and then fell down next to it.
Off with you, Iron Bull. You've given me my revenge, but I won't accept your pity. Leave me.
I grimaced. The nerve of this bitch. I go through all this trouble to save her, and this is what she wants? To stay here and die? I had half a mind to do just that, just to leave her here. In fact, I got to walking. I didn't have time to deal with some stupid girl with a chip on her shoulder. I got all of about 5 steps before the struggler began pulling at my soul. God damn it. I walked back to her. Get the hell up. She scowled.
I told you I don't want your pity. I deserve to die for being so weak. I couldn't even defend myself from that pig.
I snatched her by the collar and lifted her from the ground. You didn't fail because you were weak. You failed because a sick asshole got the better of you. And honestly, for what you did to all of us back at the pit, you probably damn well deserve it.
So leave me be, then!
No, I said. You don't get off that easy. I know you'd rather die than face the humiliation and consequences of your actions. But not today, bitch. I'm saving your sorry ass for everyone to see.
Hey!
Blue Rose cried as I lifted her over my shoulder.
Stop!
I glanced up at the sky. Still plenty of time left. Better hold on, I said as I repositioned her onto my back. This is going to be a rough ride. Blue Rose finally stopped protesting after about 20 minutes into the run. By that time, the silhouette of Du Gok Bong was cresting on the horizon and well within reach. My core was still over half full, having topped some of it back up with fresh frenzy from my short fight with Ho Chin. I cultivated what I could, strengthening my muscles while my body healed and toughened my skin.
I do not understand you,
Blue Rose suddenly said from behind, her voice reverberating as she jostled against my back.
Why do you do this thing?
What thing?
The weak. You pity them. Save them. Why?
It was honestly a good question. I suppose explaining the struggler to her wouldn't make any sense. I used to be weak, I said. I know what it's like to be powerless. Someone had pity on me once and lent me strength. I suppose now I return the favor when I can. She didn't say anything to that. Blue Rose was quiet for a long while afterwards until finally she said,
Where I come from, I would be killed if I were to return to my clan after suffering such a defeat from a weakling like Ho Chin.
Yeah, well, we're not in Kansas anymore.
What?
Why don't you answer me something that I don't understand about you, Blue Rose? What made you want to screw us over like that at the pit?
What do you mean?
You left us there when we had agreed for you to grab all the tags for us.
You were all foolish enough to let me do it. Why should I not take advantage?
You honestly think like that?
Don't you? Why would you purposely give yourself competition when you can have an advantage?
I suppose her logic made sense in a jacked-up kind of way. So there is truly no honor amongst thieves, huh?
I am no thief,
she said. It's just an expression. But you could have fooled me. You move like a thief.
I said I am no thief.
Maybe you're just a cheat, then. Or an assassin, maybe?
Do not presume to know what I am, Bull Man.
Just calling it like I see it, Blue Rose. She went quiet again.
Just because you happen to be strong, it does not mean you are right. Do you think you are better than me because you feign honor? Such honor is for fools and dead men. Knowingly giving up an advantage is idiocy.
I chuckled. The cultivator mindset at its best. So winning for you was that important, huh? I shuffled her on my back, repositioning her. You just had to be first at any cost, even if it meant screwing everyone else over?
The prize was a high-tier elixir. I need to cultivate and ascend to the next realm if I am to leave this place, and I don't plan on staying here forever. I have need to be elsewhere.
Don't we all? She scoffed.
I see how you are, Iron Bull. working to please these fool masters. I know your story also. I spoke to those weakling brothers that you pity. You chose to be here, didn't you?
Yeah, and?
A madness must plague you. You pity the weak, yet also seek death.
And what do you seek? She paused again.
Revenge.
Revenge for what? But Blue Rose didn't answer and refused to say anything else until we reached the beacons and the edge of the barrier. The contingent of brown robes was still gathered together there and erupted into applause as we crossed the finish line. I set Blue Rose down just as Chief Instructor Yora approached the both of us.
Emblems?
She said, outstretching her hand. I handed mine over and Blue Rose did the same. I then handed over the extra one that was meant for Ho Chin. For one that didn't make it, I said. Yora chuckled as she looked between me and Blue Rose.
It looks as if you two nearly didn't make it yourselves. But congratulations. You have both passed the examination.
The assembly of brown robes broke into applause again.
Participants! Assemble!
Yora shouted. We pulled ourselves into a line, with Blue Rose balancing herself on one leg by my side. Yun Jin then joined Yora as they began handing each of us new white robes.
Now for the prizes,
Yora said.
First, second, and third place will each receive an elixir. Unfortunately, as all participants did not return, there is no bonus pill.
Ah, well, I thought. A small price to pay for getting rid of that scumbag. Yora then called Taj Chui forward and awarded him with the high-tier elixir for coming first. Not surprisingly, the awards for second and third went to the other flyboys who had snatched their emblems ahead of everyone else.
And for the final award for best performance,
Yora said,
the winner will be decided by yourselves. Choose now between yourselves who should be given this award, which will be a high-tier elixir. Speak freely now and make your choice.
Murmurs broke out.
It should be me, Taj Chui said. I won after all. Clearly I performed the best.
That brought on a cacophony of mocks and jeers.
Haven't you gotten enough?
Greedy bastard! I'd never agree to you winning. It should be me.
You cannot nominate yourself,
Yora said. Taj Chui grimaced and then pointed to Blue Rose.
Her then. It was her idea that got me the win.
Blue Rose scoffed.
I deserve nothing.
She then paused and looked up at me, the faintest hint of lemonade in her soul.
It should be him, the Iron Bull.
Yes, the Iron Bull!
One of the guys from the pit shouted.
He jumped in first! True, the Iron Bull! We wouldn't have gotten through without him!
I smiled and gave them a bow of thanks, even though I didn't need the reward. The lemonade they produced was reward enough. I cultivated it and stored it swiftly within my dantian. I then looked down at Blue Rose and gave her a smile. She turned her head as if annoyed.
It seems this is yours,
Yora said, presenting me the elixir.
Well done, Iron Bull.
I accepted the small blue vial with a bow. Thank you, Chief Instructor.
This concludes the examination,
she shouted to the assembly.
These who stand before you now have ascended to the rank of White Robe. Respect them as your upperclassmen. Work hard, and you may one day join them. Dismissed!
The assembly broke, and Lo Ren and Chu Ren immediately ran to me, giving congratulations. Lo Ren then began asking me about the exam and what had happened, but I was in no mood to give him an instant replay. I'll tell you later, I said. I need to get cleaned up.
We'll see you later then, Iron Bull,
Chu Ren said, and the brothers both gave me a bow. Blue Rose scoffed at them as they left. What? I said. She shook her head and then hissed in pain as she began to limp away.
Nothing.
I still didn't know what to make of her. A tryhard that hated help. I looked down at the small blue vial in my hand and got an idea. Hey, Blue Rose. As she turned her head, I tossed the elixir to her. She caught it with a look of shock. You can cultivate that while waiting for your leg to heal.
What?
Figured you'll need it a lot more than me, I said with a genuine smile. 'Cause you're weak, remember? I gave her a wink, and a flurry of emotions erupted within her as she stood there with her mouth open. Her pride and ego spewed hot anger, but no way would the cultivator and her reject such a valuable prize. I walked away as she stewed in her own juices. I truly had no use for the elixir, but giving it to her wasn't completely altruistic either. I couldn't cultivate chi from it, but the amount of anger and lemonade now spewing out of Blue Rose made a damn good substitute. I cultivated it quickly and then left, giving her a pleasant smile.
Chapter 18. Master Heidong released a tired sigh as he watched Guizhu embrace Yu Li at the entrance to the courtyard. In all his years, never would he have imagined for such a thing to take place in his very home. Yet here they were at sundown, Guizhu, a former outer disciple, and Yu Li, a simple native Terran girl residing within his estate within the Imperial City. They meant next to nothing to him in his former life. But now they were family. Part of him could still barely get his mind around the concept. His wife Redong, however, had no such hang-ups and embraced the both of them as they arrived, and then immediately relieved them of little Su Ling, who went with her Nai-Nai to play in the gardens. The former Firebird member Zhu Gong looked on with a smile from the gate, as did several other refugees from the native housing district who were busying themselves tidying up the courtyard before dusk. He released another sigh, and a voice came from behind him.
You could at least pretend you are not perturbed by their presence.
Fia stepped next to him on the veranda that overlooked the courtyard. He shifted his eyes to her. I am pretending. She let out a chuckle and wrapped her arms around him before kissing him on the temple.
Thank you again for this, Baba.
He released another sigh, more exaggerated this time and lighthearted. You're worse than your mother when it comes to getting things out of me, I swear. Fia giggled. Honestly, though, Fia, Heidong said, how long will these people stay here? We cannot afford this long term.
Just until Jianyi makes the appeal to the princess,
Fia said.
I'm sure Her Majesty would not allow the law these silly bird sisters have put in place to stand.
Heidong chortled mirthlessly. I fear she may allow much more than that, daughter. Or at least the warden will, and the princess will simply defer to the warden's decision. I knew the Lady Silvertear was a cold woman, but her cruelty knows no bounds. I'm sure if your mother wasn't crippled already, she would be targeting her as well as myself and you. Fia stayed quiet at that, and they both looked out at the sunset now fading in the distance.
How bad are things, father?
Fia asked in a serious tone.
Truthfully.
Heidong almost didn't want to answer. It wasn't Fia's place to worry about the financial concerns of the family. But his normal confidant, his dear wife, seemed to be concerned only with their grandchild now. It was as if Redong had regressed in mind as well as spirit, preferring the role of Nai-Nai to that of the fierce warrior woman and protective wife she used to be. In that sense, Fia was more so the lady of the house now. And as Fia was beginning to now make decisions that affected the household, it was perhaps time she bore some of the burdens as well. And knowledge, at the very least. The finances won't last more than 2 months more, Heidong said, a lump forming in his throat. The warden has blocked me in the marketplace. No one will buy my wares, and the expenses keep mounting, especially now.
The warden has blocked you from selling?
Fia asked, her eyes wide with concern.
How has she done this?
She has reduced me to a lower caste. We all have been. No one of social standing would dare do business with me now. Not even in the auction. No one will bid. Fia frowned.
Father, let us help. The Terran sect has resources. Jian Yi is leader now while Max is away. I'm sure she would aid us if we only—
No, Heidong said, his skin bristling. I cannot accept such charity.
At least accept it for housing Guizhu and the others.
That thought was tempting, but the idea that he had to stoop so low made his stomach ill. I must find another means of income, he said.
What do you mean? You are the best artisan crafter in the province, and an even better warden. We need only survive until Max's return. He will set all this right. I know he will.
Heidong snorted. In 3 years' time? We won't survive that long. And not to mention he is the cause of all of this, he wanted to add, but he spared Fia the words. She knew the same well enough, and it wouldn't help to drive home the fact. She could not change the reality of the situation any more than he could.
What if you found other buyers to sell to?
Fia asked. Like whom?
Perhaps in another province.
The expense of travel alone would make that unfeasible, and my shame will follow me regardless. Fia went quiet again, but her eyes shifted back and forth in thought, and then suddenly they lit up.
You can sell them to the Furious Lightning sect.
Who?
Max's Marshall sect, the remnants of the Firebirds. Kel Ji is in control of them now, and it would be legal to sell weapons to her as a Marshall sect. She will buy at market rates and then—
It's still a form of charity. I won't accept it. Fia fumed at him with lowered brows.
Will you allow me to finish?
He sighed again. Fine. Go on.
It won't be a form of charity. Kelji will resell your wares on the auction. It's a way around the warden blocking you, not charity.
Her idea held some merit, but— Surely they will know they are mine.
Yes,
Fia said.
Exactly. Which is why they will sell quickly if they are not being sold by you. Everyone still knows you make the best quality weapons and artifacts. To buy them secondhand would be a boon to anyone.
Heidong pondered it for a moment. This truly was his daughter, skilled in cunning as well as martial arts. Still, the idea was not without risk of failure.
There is a chance this still will not work, he said. Fia shrugged.
But a chance worth taking, no?
Heidong pondered it a moment more. If he could move 2 pieces a month, it would be enough to sustain the household, something he could scarcely do now. But if Fia's plan could work...
All right. How would we go about this? He asked.
Fia looked to the horizon.
Kelji will likely be at the Handler station now with Lee. If I go quickly, I can catch her before she heads back to the native housing district.
With who?
Not important. I will go to see her now to make the arrangements. Just make the weapons available and leave the rest to me.
With that, Fia left, leaping into the sky with Qing Gong. Heidong watched her vault over the wall of the courtyard with a mixture of pride and humility. The latter for himself, and the former for his daughter.
So far have I fallen, he thought.
But at least he had a daughter he could rely upon to make things right. And hopefully a future son-in-law who would do the same. But as for now, his future would lie in the hands of one known as Kelji.
Kelsey cultivated the diffuse frenzy in her body and stored it within her Dantian. It was what she had come to practice nightly when the blood moon rose. Part of her wished she could go beyond the barrier and expose herself to the dark frenzy directly, like she had done with Max in the past to cultivate her spiritual aspect the same way he had. But such was impossible now. For one, she would be polluting her flame and would not have the convenience of Venya to cleanse herself. And two, without a second flame to guide her in the darkness, she could easily fall prey to Izolix and the madness it would inspire within her. Now, she had to settle for the subtle ire the moon stirred within her own soul to produce a faint stream of frenzy to cultivate from. Still, she was pleased with how much progress she and Max had made in honing her spiritual techniques once she had reached the core realm 6 months ago. In the time before he had left, she and Max had trained to achieve the soul shield technique, and now she could even manifest spectral weapon and spectral armor while within the spiritual realm of her own mind. There, she had finally gotten to meet Venya in the flesh, so to speak. Her first glimpse of her was awe-inspiring. A spitting image of the legendary Big Sis, or so Max had described. That alone was reward enough for the agony of facing the full effects of the Blood Moon each night and fighting the hordes of demons and madness that came with it. For over 5 months, she and Max had gotten into a routine of helping each other train through Blood Moon exposure, facing the eyeball-ridden tentacles of the Dark God of Frenzy each night. She was nowhere near mastery level like Max, but she could withstand the Blood Moon for over a minute now using Soul Shield. She craved honing her skills further, but for the last month or so since Max's departure, Kelsey had to settle for this meager form of cultivation instead. Relying on the ire the Blood Moon inspired within her own soul as it triggered the spiritual root of her Tao. The moon's oppression and the demons it inflicted upon their world filled her heart with contempt as she stared up at it. Anger for all the people dear to her that it had slain through its minions, even those by her own hand. It mocked her, radiating its loathsome taint to cover the world in dread and fear. The moon seemed even brighter than normal, and Kelsey swore she could almost sense the tendrils of dark frenzy spewing from it. Or perhaps it was only in her imagination, or residual trauma from subjecting herself to the dark influence of the moon for weeks on end. But now she couldn't even travel back to the bunker to check on her mother because of the stupid law that was passed. She still didn't understand the dynamics fully, but she had to stay vigil over the Terran sect now that Guizhu and Zhu Tian couldn't stand guard. That brought on a new sense of contempt within her soul in the form of Max's Tao, the oppression of the Empire itself. The two forms of hatred, that of the moon and that of the Empire, combined in her heart to stir her flame with even more fervor. A fountain of frenzy spewed forth, and she cultivated it quickly to stretch the growing capacity of her Dantian.
Hey, you okay there, babe?
The gentle and lighthearted tone broke her out of her thoughts, and Kelsey looked across the handler station to see Lee smiling at her. Just the sight of him diffused her ire, and she wondered for a moment whether his presence was a good thing or not for her cultivation. She smiled back at him, blushing.
Nothing. Just lost in my own head.
You look damn pissed off at that moon. What'd it do to you?
Lee grinned as he tossed a backpack he'd been fiddling with into a pile and then joined her at the back of the handler station, draping his arm over her shoulder. She nuzzled into him and enjoyed a warmth of a different kind now filling her soul.
You don't want to know,
she said truthfully. Lee merely laughed and kissed her sweetly on the cheek. She hadn't told Lee about her cultivation method fully, only that she was learning from Max, and easygoing as he was, that was enough for Lee to accept all kinds of things from her. She'd gotten a handler pass, and Lee would cover for her while she hunted monsters and spirit beasts in the wild. But she hadn't been able to do that since the change in law. Now, the only fighting she did came in the form of the odd cultivator who was stupid enough to come poking around in Max's absence. The rest of the time was just spent waiting at the gate and looking out for trouble, which meant she couldn't spend as much time with Lee. Which meant meeting with him after work like this was important.
Hard day?
She asked.
Not too bad, Lee said. Everyone got in safe and sound. That's the main thing.
She nodded. Most of the handlers had already cleared out for the day, leaving only Lee to pack up along with the Imperial guards who were busy tallying taxes. Kelsey was just about to suggest they grab a bite to eat in the square when a voice called out to them from behind.
Lee! Kelsey!
They both turned to see Fia touching down on the ground behind them. She was bathed in sweat and out of breath, like she'd just run a marathon.
Lady Fia?
Lee said with surprise.
Heck you doing out here so late?
And did you actually ching-gong here?
Kelsey asked.
What happened to the flying car?
The flying what?
Skiff!
Kelsey corrected herself.
Oh, well, we had to sell it. Expenses. Which is what brings me here, actually,
Freya said. Kelsey and Lee both looked at one another, confused.
We need to talk,
Freya said.
I have a big favor to ask.
Kelsey had to ask Freya to slow down several times as she explained what she needed. While her knowledge of Yi had grown near exponentially over the last few months, even to the point of being able to read the scripts from Vanya's blade herself, Kelsey still could not make sense of Fia's somewhat formal tones at times, which went completely over her head.
Okay, let me see if I understand,
Kelsey said.
I approve the bank payments for your dad from the Furious Lightning Sect, and then wait a couple of weeks and resell the weapons at the auction? Yes,
she said.
But perhaps waiting a month would be better, and don't sell everything at once.
You know, I could help a bit, Lee said. I could put them out on display and mention that it's Kelji's private collection or something. Generate some interest.
Fia's eyes lit up brightly.
That's a great idea, Lee. Thank you. Things really this bad, Fia?
Kelsey asked. She didn't respond right away, but the fall of her countenance said it all. Kelsey was about to tell her never mind when a loud cry suddenly split the air.
Alarm! Sound the alarm!
They all paused and looked to see the Imperial Guard screaming towards them through cuffed hands. Both Kelsey and Fia froze, but Lee responded immediately and ran to the corner of the handler station and began pulling on a rope. A bell tolled, and after a few more swings from Lee, another bell echoed it in the distance, and the process quickly repeated itself. Fear rose up inside Kelsey's stomach, but her flame quickly flash-converted it into frenzy. She ran to Lee and measured her words with struggler's resolve.
What's going on?
Hell if I know, Lee said.
But when one of those guys shout for the alarm, you follow through and ask questions later.
Is it a surge?
Fia asked.
Maybe. Ain't seen one of those for months,
Lee said. Kelsey didn't know what a surge was, but her instincts told her it could be only one thing.
The demons?
Lee merely nodded, and Kelsey was already sprinting towards where the guard had run from.
Kelji!
Lee and Fia shouted in unison, but her flame was way ahead of them. Anxiety and anticipation filled her heart as the guards tried to stop her as well.
Hey, don't go there! It's dangerous!
But as she ran past the entrance to the handler station and into the open space beyond the boundary wall, she saw for herself what everyone was afraid of. There, not more than 50 feet away, was a scene she was well accustomed to. A wall of demons, thousands strong, were clawing and clamoring against the invisible wall of the barrier, their shrieks and screams filling the night with terror. Just the sight of them caused her flame to erupt with frenzy. Every instinct was yelling for her to plow straight into them with abandon, but the struggler kept her firmly in place. This was a common occurrence out in the wild, especially when the gate was still open. But to see this here? Kelsey looked about for answers. Thankfully, Lee and Fia had followed her.
This happens a lot?
Kelsey could sense the fear in their hearts as they gawked at her like she was a madwoman.
Kelsey, you need to get away from there, Lee shouted. One of those things could break through.
Could they?
The thought caused her to stare more intently at the red-skinned humanoids clawing to get at her. It was almost as if they were fixated on her in particular. She looked up at the moon, and it did indeed look brighter. More intense, and there was no question about it now. She could faintly taste the dark frenzy in the air. Was the barrier here weaker than what Vanya produced, perhaps?
Kelsey, come back!
Fia shouted. The guards and enforcers shouted for her to do the same, but the fear in their souls prevented them from taking a further step.
High-tier cultivators are on their way, Lee said. They'll take care of whatever breaks through.
Kelsey grinned at him with struggler's resolve.
What am I, dog shit? I live for this stuff. If anything breaks through, I'll be killing it first.
Her words caused a mixture of fear and lemonade to fill his soul.
You scare the hell out of me, babe. But damn, you're hot when you do it.
That actually caused her to blush, and she let out a laugh to play it off.
All right, I'll step back.
As she turned to walk back towards the handler shed, something faintly caught her ear. Not words exactly. A sentiment. A thought. Hatred and envy.
Kelsey turned about, and far in the darkness, hundreds of feet away, she could just make out the silhouette of something huge standing in the sea of demons before her. Something the size of a building. Multiple sets of red eyes shone in the darkness, and for a moment she wondered if it was another awakened corpse demon like what she had fought in the basement of the bunker. But this thing seemed more powerful than that. Whatever it was, even from where she stood, she could sense the dark frenzy boiling off of it. The challenge rose inside of her, generating frenzy like a volcano. Kelsey flooded her Dantian and then pointed towards the creature with Fear the Flame.
Yeah, I see you, she said in English. Izolix better hope he picked the right one with you, because now that I know you exist, I'm coming for your ass.
She couldn't see it exactly, but she could sense the thing respond with a leer. More hatred. Laughter.
Kelji?
Lee said, looking more fearful than ever now.
What did you just say? Are you all right? I'm fine,
Kelsey said in Yi again, but suddenly a new thought occurred. If this was happening here, then what about back home?
Let's go,
Kelsey said.
Nothing is breaking through here tonight.
What? Lee said.
How do you know? 'Cause it would have done so already.
Lee looked back at her dumbfounded, and so did Fia. Kelsey looked to her next.
I'll do the thing for your dad,
she said.
But after that, I need to head back to the wild. What? You'll have to protect the sect somehow, Fia. After tomorrow, I need to get back home.
Chapter 19. I sat in the darkness with my two best friends, Blue Struggler Me and my alter ego, Mr. Demon. Neither of them were receptive to my attempts at mediation to combine their souls. Within the spiritual confines of my own mind, I tried everything within my mental powers to merge the two halves of my spirit, but to no avail. I was missing something clearly. Knowledge, perhaps? I traced through the scripts of the Foundation Manual within a window of my mind's eye and focused on the latter stages of Chi cultivation when it came to the Core Realm. Core Formation. First Tier Core Formation. Second Tier Core Body Refinement. Third Tier Core Mental Refinement. Fourth Tier Core Density Refinement. Fifth Tier Inner Soul Detection. Sixth Tier Inner Soul Focus. Seventh Tier Inner Soul Refinement. 8th tier, inner soul projection. 9th tier, secondary soul germination. I was definitely bordering on the 9th tier now. Secondary soul germination. Everything else before that I seemed to have mastered. I had even broken through on my next tier of death mastery, having achieved Fear No Death, so that certainly wasn't an impediment to my ascension anymore. The blockage had to be one of knowledge for sure. I just didn't know what I needed to do. I searched the text of the manual again for any clues I might have missed. There was really only one paragraph that spoke to the secondary soul germination.
Within the later stages of solid core formation, a practitioner will begin to sense a secondary consciousness within their Dantian. This stage is known as the germination of one's sacred soul. Through further cultivation of chi, the soul is nourished through a gestation period. The sacred soul is the truest reflection of one's inner self. Whether a god or a demon, a sacred soul reveals the identity and history of one's journey. Therefore, caution must be taken in how one accumulates power after this stage is achieved.
It was the same passage I'd read 1,000 times over. Nothing new here, but this was as much as the manual could tell me about the sacred soul realm. Clearly, I'd nearly outgrown the book. But I hadn't had much luck sourcing a replacement either. A manual on sacred soul realm cultivation was something more coveted than even scrolls of martial techniques or styles. I wasn't even sure they existed, to be honest. At least there were none in Jern, not even in the Imperial City Library. Sacred Soul Realm cultivation was on the same tier as the Warden and Princess. Mu Lin had explained that even to gain access to a manual, you had to have already broken through to the Sacred Soul Realm first. and even that wasn't guaranteed. For Chi cultivators, it was a step few dared to even attempt. A failed breakthrough could lead to death or being crippled for life, much like how Fia's mom was now. Which was why most cultivators settled to be high-tier core realm and progress no further. Mu Lin had said the chances of a successful breakthrough was 1 in 10, the odds for success greater if you held a strong bloodline, which made my upcoming duel with the Warden all the more challenging. She had already made the breakthrough, and her true powers were likely on a scale I hadn't fully experienced yet. But I needed to get as strong as her, or as strong as Threya even, if I wanted to go toe-to-toe with those godlike beings that attacked the Earth. And once I went full rebellion, they sure as shit would come looking. Just the thought of that stirred my flame and my eagerness to ascend. But to get even close to that, I needed to master this final step of the core realm first. The germination of my secondary soul. That's where I was now stuck. Beyond that, I needed a new counterpart when it came to my berserker path as well. The Shuras from Threya's sword, or Vanya, were imprinted in my memory. But for any stage beyond that, I possessed no guide. Still, there were techniques I was yet to master there as well, like Furnace of the Frenzied Flame. I supposed, considering that, I was good for now. I decided to go over all the high-tier berserker techniques in my arsenal and read them as they appeared in my mind's eye.
Spectral body. The form of one's soul is forever being molded, but for it to take true shape, it must first develop a body. Use this technique to both envision and inhabit a spectral body within thy own core. Tread thou carefully, however, for the reflection of one's true inner self is forged not by will, but the history of one's thoughts and deeds. Spectral armor. Once developed, this armor can embody the strength of one's soul and protect one's spectral body in the spiritual realm. Spectral weapon. The extension of one's will in spiritual form, use it to inflict damage within the spiritual realm. Spectral domain. Expand the interior of one's frenzied core to create an inner world to be inhabited by one's spectral body. Spectral form. An advanced manifestation technique to summon thy spectral body into the physical realm. Furnace of the Frenzied Flame. Manifest your spectral domain, body, and flame into the physical world. When in this state, a berserker is at once most powerful and most vulnerable. For any who witness such a manifestation will know immediately thy true nature by the revelation of thy flame. Do so to inspire the unkindled and newly kindled alike. But if an enemy of the flame doth witness such power, be certain to ensure their demise.
I had mastered everything besides the last three, spectral domain, spectral form, and furnace of the frenzied flame. Clearly, spectral form and furnace of the frenzied flame relied on spectral body and spectral domain, respectively. Perhaps I needed to focus on my spectral domain since I hadn't really done much about that. As I looked about me and my two other selves, we were still sitting in a pitch-black void. I wasn't sure how to even create a domain, but maybe that was my next step. Clearing my mind, I tried to manifest my surroundings. I didn't know what to think of at first. I thought about Fia and our private lakeside beach. A clear sky above, a gentle wind blowing across the water's surface. It was definitely a place I held dear to my heart. When I opened my spiritual eyes again, there was a glowing sphere hovering before me in the darkness. Within it was a snow globe-like visage of the exact image I had imagined. Holy cow. Was it that easy? Or perhaps I had just gotten skilled in my spiritual manipulation. Cautiously, I reached out to touch the globe, and in an instant, my environment changed, Gone was the darkness, and instead was a perfect reflection of what was inside the sphere. Blue sky, the lake. The struggler and demon glanced about at the new surrounds, the struggler looking much happier than the demon, who then gave me a thumbs up. But I still couldn't feel anything myself, though. In my disembodied form, it was all just visual to me. I focused my consciousness towards the struggler, and like being teleported back home, I suddenly found myself there on the sandy beach, the lake stretching out before me, the wind in my face. I did a spiritual double take. It was like I was actually there. So much so, I almost felt the need to look out for roaming spirit beasts. Was this real? I suppose it was as real as anything I had experienced within my own mind. And that included my training with Venya. That turned out to be real. So this had to be real too. Well, to me, at least. I enjoyed a few more minutes of bliss, wading into the warm, pristine water of the lake. After being confined in prison cells for over a month, being outside like this, viewing the brilliant sun high above, was a treat that soothed my soul. After some time, I finally willed myself to leave. The beach disappeared and shrunk back down into its orb form again. I wondered just how many of these orbs I could make, or what limitations they had. I wondered also if this could be a way to push the demon and the struggler to the next level somehow. I certainly couldn't do that by giving them a peaceful beach to hang out in, that was for sure. But maybe there was some other environment I could forge that would be more conducive. I thought some more and recalled the dark sky riddled with yellow flames that Threya had summoned when she used Furnace of the Frenzied Flame. Perhaps my spectral domain would need to be similar if I truly wanted the demon and struggler to grow and combine. Gathering my thoughts, I focused on the most oppressive environment I could think of that would promote growth and struggle. In my mind's eye, I glimpsed the hellplane surface of the moon with its purple skies and deep red shale. When I opened my spiritual eyes again, a second orb had formed, and when I touched it, I was indeed transported to that hellish place. But unlike the actual plane, there was no oppressive dark frenzy to contend with. The demon looked pleased, and the struggler nonplussed. It was as if I had set the scenery, but there was no oomph to it. No true power, just a recreation. But Threya's inner world certainly held power. I wondered what I would need to do to add that to this place. Perhaps I needed to connect to the true spiritual realm somehow. Like going online with a single-player game to tap into multiplayer. I laughed at my own musing. No one in this new world would understand an analogy like that. Except maybe for Kelsey. Okay, enough of this, I thought. And relinquishing the orb, settled back into soothing darkness again with my two selves looking back at me. I needed to focus on what I was missing. Looking back through the Foundation manual, I searched for further insights that might help. Within that single paragraph that referenced a secondary soul, there was only one sentence that spoke on how to actually achieve it.
Through further cultivation of chi, the soul is nourished through a gestation period.
That was it. But a gestation period? Do I have to wait 9 months? I laughed at my own joke. I already had a 9-month deadline I couldn't miss. But what did further cultivation of chi actually mean? Did I just need a heck of a lot more frenzy? Both the struggler and demon simply shrugged at me.
Thanks, fellas. A lot of use you both are, I mumbled with chagrin.
Who are you talking to?
I opened my eyes in the real world to find myself still seated in lotus position on my cot and facing Blue Rose. She was leaning on a cane, her right leg bandaged in a splint. I was in my new room within the prison, a cell with only one roommate now that I was a white robe. But that roommate wasn't Blue Rose. What are you doing here?
It's nearly time for our first lesson, and I didn't see you,
she said.
I came to find you.
What? I had no idea how long I'd been meditating for, but clearly it had been far too long. Shit! I jumped out of my cot and grabbed my axe and glaive. I had no idea what our first lesson as white robes would entail, but I wanted to be prepared. I looked back at Blue Rose while she hobbled behind me. For her to come and get me like this was a change of character indeed. Thanks, Blue Rose, I said. I owe you one.
Don't think that this is charity. We would all be punished if we didn't all show up on time.
I chuckled. Good to know you're still you. She didn't respond, but kept hobbling along rather swiftly through the corridors of the prison, keeping up with my pace. We'd been granted a day off to recover from the white robe exam, and while I had used it to focus on my internal training, Blue Rose had clearly been using it to heal. Looks like the leg's coming along nicely, I said. Do you want me to carry you again?
Just keep moving.
I cultivated the small bit of irritation I'd caused within her and refocused my mind on the new task at hand. I desperately wanted to unlock the secrets of my own progression, to combine the struggler and demon and break through to the sacred soul realm, but I had progress to make within the tribute system as well. And now is my time to find out exactly what I needed to do to get to Black Robe and beyond. I fell into ranks, finding a place next to my new roommate, Tulok. He was sullied, as big as Jakra, but with a full head of white hair that was tied in a topknot and a short beard to match. Blue Rose shuffled in next to me, and then after a few moments, Chief Instructor Yora appeared with a dozen black robes I hadn't seen before. They formed a line before the entire contingent, which I gauged was about 500 of us. Yora then took center stage and began addressing the assembly.
"White robes," she said. "A new induction has been added to your ranks. These people will be distributed evenly amongst your 10 platoons. The black robes before you are entering into their final stages for qualifications to become legionnaires. As such, they will act as your platoon commanders. For those of you who have been white robes for some time, this is nothing new. For those who are new, your assignment shall be split between harvesting monster cores from the wild and processing said cores into pills and elixirs in the alchemy lab. For core refinement, you will attend classes and gain access to the library to study. For core harvesting, you will be led by your black robe commanders to compete with other platoons for the most cores harvested. Each week will be a tally with cultivation rewards dispersed based on performance."
She paused as if waiting for questions, but no one dared say anything.
"The remainder of your time will be spent in martial training, particularly in the use of the Phalanx Glaive for those who choose that path. The requirements for entry into the next rank will be a combat assessment equivalent to gold bracket ranking. You will be required to win a tournament match against a suitably experienced black robe opponent."
I ran over the new duties in my head. So, kill monsters, fight each other, and cook up drugs? Sounds a heck of a lot better than shoveling pig shit, I whispered to Blue Rose, and she let out a surprised snort of laughter. My new roommate, Tulok, gave us both a piercing glare. He didn't say anything but his looks at it all.
Shut the hell up.
I suppressed an inner grin at that, but was even more amazed that I had actually managed to make Blue Rose laugh. Yora dismissed the assembly, and the black robes at the front began forming us into smaller units. A kid that looked barely out of his teens came to a halt before our platoon. He was pale-skinned with blue hair, eyes the same deep blue color. He carried himself with the air of a young master, someone used to getting respect no matter where he went, and sure enough, when he opened his mouth, his aristocratic tones and pronunciation placed him in the upper echelons of society.
"This one is Jay Sulong," he said in his high-pitched voice. "This one will be your commander for the next 2 weeks. This one demands obedience and competence. Failure at either, and you will find yourself dead under my command. Understood?"
No one said anything to the rhetorical question. Then suddenly the kid shouted again.
"I said understood! Reply with, yes, Commander, if you understand."
"Yes, Commander!"
The entire platoon shouted, but I barely said anything. How is this kid for real, I thought. But thankfully I had the sense to not say it out loud this time.
"First 3 rows, core harvesting," he shouted. "Next 2 rows, martial training. Last row, core refinement."
I smiled at that. I was grouped with the drug-making crew, which was just fine for me. I could get a good workout any time fighting monsters and sparring, but what I needed now more than ever was knowledge. And while I had no affinity for cooking up meth in a lab, it would at least give me access to the library, something that I've been craving to do for the last 2 days. Jesu Long dispersed the other tributes to their stations and then approached us in the last line.
Where are the new inductees?
Blue Rose and I raised our hands. Jesu Long looked at Blue Rose and scoffed.
An injury from the exam?
Blue Rose cleared her throat.
Yes, Commander.
Fitting. It is why new inductees are always given refinement rotation first. Brown robe weaklings barely scraping through.
I sensed the anger spike within Blue Rose, but she kept her mouth shut and her poker face intact. Jesu Long then looked at me.
You, however, look fit for duty, surprisingly,
he said.
Report to harvesting troop with the others.
Shit. I really wanted access to that library. I cycled my frenzy with Struggler's Resolve. I am still injured a bit, Commander. Internally. I wouldn't mind getting my refinement duties out of the way while I'm healing, so I can be fully fit to do my best in harvesting. Jesu Long's eyes grew wide with anger.
You dare speak?
Only to say I didn't get another word out before Jesu Long threw a punch straight into my ribcage. It was a pulled punch, and I could barely feel it. A few seconds of confusion passed, and then suddenly I remembered to wince. Jesu Long scoffed.
A pathetic charade! You are not injured! Why do you seek to not fight? Are you a coward, then? Answer me!
The demon began to rile up at the challenge. I was just about to answer him with something I'd probably regret when Blue Rose spoke ahead of me.
He is, Commander,
Blue Rose said.
I was injured saving him. He would be much better off refining cores than harvesting them.
I glanced at Blue Rose and saw the faintest smirk on her lips. That damn bitch. I wasn't sure if she was trying to help me out or just getting back at me, or maybe a bit of both. Either way, I now had to eat humble pie and paint myself a chicken shit in front of this young master to get what I wanted. It's true, I said. Please allow me to stay and study, Commander.
Jesu Long glared at me.
As big as a damned sullied and as spineless as a slug.
He spat on the ground and then looked at Tulok, who had stood wordlessly beside us the entire time.
You've been here a while, haven't you?
Yes, Commander, he said.
Take these two to the alchemy lab,
Jesu Long said with a scowl.
Before their weakness makes me wretch.
Chapter 20. Blue Rose wore a stupid smile on her face the entire time Tulok led us from the courtyard to the library and alchemy lab just outside the main prison. She obviously enjoyed my self-deprecation, especially in front of a prick of a young master that Jesu Long seemed to be.
Hey, Tulok, I said. What's the deal with our commander? Do you know him?
More than I know you, he said, looking down at me with a glance. Which isn't to say much, mind you. But what I do know is that Jesu Long is not one to be trifled with. Now you're both already on his bad side. Not a good start, Iron Bull.
He was probably right. Granted, I didn't know Tulok very well either, having only met him a day prior, but he seemed a by-the-book, even-keeled sort of guy. His demeanor now was no different, focused more on getting us to our destination than bothering with idle chit-chat.
He looks very young,
Blue Rose said.
And his chi density is substantial. I bet he's high-tier Korvram at least.
Most like him who come here are that way, Tulok said. We call them token black robes, but not to their faces, mind you.
Token?
Blue Rose asked.
What do you mean?
Volunteer tributes from prestigious families within the core worlds. He's likely the son of a warden or lower court lord, fed pills and elixirs his whole life to accelerate down the cultivation path. Now he's probably a half step from the sacred soul realm and looking for a quick placement in the diamond bracket before he has his breakthrough. T
Tulok then let out a scoff.
People like him won't even need to set foot on a hell world to get his jade trim.
What?
Blue Rose said.
Even in this place, the core worlds have their influence, Tulok said. Special privilege. Try not to let it get to you, though. It is what it is.
So that was it, I thought. The pampered path the princess was trying to put me on.
To hell with all that, I said, my flame stirring. I'm here for the gains, not the glory.
Well, the glory too, admittedly. I still needed that diamond bracket ranking to face the warden after all.
Tulok chortled. With a statement like that, I wonder why you flaked out just now to stay behind and make elixirs.
He then glanced at Blue Rose and smiled.
But I'd say the answer to that is pretty obvious.
I immediately laughed, and Blue Rose turned a shade of red.
There's nothing like that going on between us,
Blue Rose said.
We're not even friends.
Yeah, I said with a smile. I hate this bitch. Tulok let out a belly laugh, and Blue Rose turned even redder.
Cute, he said. All right, this is it.
We stopped in front of the prison library, a standalone structure that was 2 stories high. Next to it was the alchemy lab, which was a single story, but a lot wider. White robes were already busying themselves within the lab, heating kettles and flasks over open flames. Tulok led us towards the doors to the library, and when he ushered us through, I was surprised to find the place fairly well kept and stocked with books on an upper floor accessible by stairwells. The bottom floor seemed to be comprised of classrooms with desks, seating cushions, and chalkboards.
Stay here, Tulok said. I'll get my star easy.
When he left, Blue Rose elbowed me in the ribs.
Don't get any